You don't need someone yelling at you. You just want someone to say what you're already thinking. That's MVR. Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins. They take the biggest stories of the day, cut through the nonsense, and say the quiet part out loud.
The American people have had enough.
Well, except for white women 55 plus.
There are a lot of white women that lean left.
Usually with a little sarcasm.
Thankfully, we know all the sane ones.
MVR, weekdays 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Welcome back to Pep Talk. I'm your host, PJ, today filling in for Meg once again. 437-1620, 437-1620, if you have any questions for our next guest, Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster. Welcome to back to the show, sir.
Glad to be here. It's always a pleasure, and we love taking phone calls. If you wish to call or text us, call 850-437-1620, and we'll try to add you to the program. I usually come prepared with a topic or two or three, and today, since I've been practicing for 46 years, just turned 72 years old, I've been thinking more and more about my past practice, and I'm going to take you down a trip down memory lane. So we got to go back to around 1987, and many of you may remember that in the old days when you came from Gulf Breeze off the 3 Mile Bridge, right on your left, it was actually a Gulf station probably in the 1960s, with the bait and tackle store next to it was an old liquor package store, Donahue's. It's right. It would have been right across where Richie's is now. So when you get off the bridge, stand on the right like Richie's, it would have been on your left, and it was called Donahue's. And that's where I used to go, and I would, you know, buy some beer or wine or something for the weekend. And what was unusual about this store was as an older fella, Mr. Donahue, I think his name was Dave Donahue, was an older fella. I was in my 20s, so he was probably in his 60s at that time. And he and his cronies would, you know, maybe open up a little bottle of scotch or bourbon, get a little plastic cup with some ice, and they just have a little happy hour there. It wasn't a bar. This was a package store, but back in the day, that's what people did. And five or six, and they would just talk, and I'd come in there, and he knew how I was. He'd go, hey, counselor, and anyway, I got to know him. Well, one day I got a call at work, and it's Mr. Donahue. He says, I need your help. And I go, well, what? He says, there was a robbery at the store last night, and one of my clerks got shot in the back of the head. He survived. He's in ICU. Can you help us? I said, well, I'll try my best. I'm not a criminal prosecutor, but I'll sure take a look at it. So I start looking at this thing. And what had happened is this. Was this clerk who was about my age in his early 20s, he was on the phone late at night, quiet night, nobody in the store, and he's on a telephone, a landline, if many of you remember what a landline is, and he's talking to his girlfriend. Well, two young men come in. They're kind of scruffy. They come in and want to know where do they keep the beer. And the beer in that place was back in another room. You had to go through a little door, and then there was a beer cooler. And they insisted that he show them where the beer was. So he puts down the phone, didn't hang up from his girlfriend. I guess he thought, I'll be right back. So he goes back into this beer place, and they said, we'll take that case. So he bends over to get the case of beer. They put a gun to the back of his head and pulled the trigger. And the bullet went right through the back of his neck, through his jaw, and even took off part of his tongue. Somehow missed his brain, which is just amazing.
Yeah.
They also had, like, it was a 9mm or a .357. I can't remember. It was some larger caliber weapon, but he had a .22 caliber bullet, which also helped my fella survive. So there he is laying in a pool of blood, gurgling. But thank goodness his girlfriend had heard everything. And these guys went to the till and robbed the till, and she could hear all this. and alertly called 911 for an ambulance and the police. These young kids, as dumb as they were, got on 98 to Destin. At that time, you know, it was no red lights, not much of anything, and they were quickly apprehended. So now they're asking me to see if I could help out civilly. Well, we found out that the shooter was 17, his accomplice was 18, and I happened to know, I did a lot of criminal defense at that time as well as personal injury, and I knew the 18-year-old's, the accomplice's lawyer. So I go up to that lawyer and said, listen, if your guy will cooperate with me and meet with me in the jail and tell me everything, I mean, just tell me everything, I'll try to put a good word in that sentencing, you know, for him. So I get to meet with this guy in jail with his lawyer, of course, and they were looking for a plea bargain. I mean, they're guilty, dead to rights.
Mm-hmm.
And what the 18-year-old told me was the gun that this 17-year-old had was given to him on his birthday by his parents, kind of like, I think it was a .357 Magnum for some reason, and that was given to a 17-year-old in Louisiana. That's where these kids were from. So I meet my client. I said, the only possible case we have, we can't go against the shooter because he's 17 and he's going to be in prison for a long time. So any verdict we get against him would be a piece of paper. But I went against the homeowners, and what I was arguing at that time was a negligent entrustment. If you go to Florida law at that time, it's still the law today. If you loan me your car, you loan it to me, but I go out and run a stop sign and cause an accident, you're liable first. The owner of a car is liable for the damage that it does before the negligent driver. That makes sense. But that's always been the law in Florida because they have deemed that cars are dangerous. Well, if a car is dangerous, I would say a gun's pretty dangerous too. And giving a 17-year-old that type of gun, not a hunting rifle to go hunting for turkeys or deer, we're talking about a handgun for what? What do you give a 17-year-old? So that was my argument. So I file suit because they offer me nothing. They go take a hike. So I file suit, and they get one of the most prominent lawyers in town, defense lawyers. He tried a lot of cases. His name was Bob Gaines, very well respected. He was a major partner in Beggs and Lane Law Firm that's still here today. He tried more cases than anybody. He was a no-nonsense type of guy, very academic, didn't talk much, didn't like me. It was very obvious, never said any boo to me. But, of course, once he got retained, I got hit with every motion possible, motions to dismiss, motions for summary judgment, and whatever. And the judge that we got, thankfully, was M.C. Blanchard. If you went down to the courthouse now, what we call the Pensacola Courthouse is actually called the M.C. Blanchard Judicial Center. So it was named after him because everybody thought so much of this judge. He was very academic, very quiet, very reserved. And when you're making arguments, you never knew which way he was going to go. He'd just sit there and look at you poker-faced until the very end. So we go to all these hearings, and finally at the last hearing, Blanchard looks at me and says, Gross, I'm going to let you get your case to trial. Now, what's going to happen on appeal? I can't tell you what the appellate court's going to do with this one. He's telling me I'm on thin ice. So we go to trial. Again, they've offered us nothing. The homeowner's policy, by the way, back then was only $25,000. Now, most today, it'd be hard to find a homeowner's less than $100,000, and most of them are much more. But back in the 80s, it was a $25,000 limit, so that's really what we were going for, was $25,000. So we tried the whole case, and the young man did cooperate. The accomplice did cooperate. The shooter never came to trial, of course. He got 55 years in prison and didn't care to come. And so the 18-year-old did come, and he told the story. My client told his story. The girlfriend told her story. And that was about that. And then we get to the jury verdict, $2.2 $2 million. Now, truthfully, $2 million was against the shooter because the jury was so mad that this guy tried to execute my client. So that's still a piece of paper. That judgment's still out there. It's collected interest. So today it's probably worth $3 million, but it's against a guy that may be in jail still, may not be. I don't know. But it's just a piece of paper. But meanwhile, we did get $200,000 against the parents. $200,000 against them for negligently entrusting a 17-year-old with a dangerous weapon, to wit, a handgun. So the whole case, you got to understand, this lawyer against me never really spoke to me or whatever. And so he files a motion for appeal and all that. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call one day, and my secretary says, it's Mr. Gaines. He wants to talk to you. He never called me before. Wants to talk to me. So I pick up the phone, and he goes, and you can tell, it's almost like he's spitting out castor oil, because he didn't want to say this. He goes, the insurance company wants to offer you $150,000 to settle this case. And I said, okay, I'll get back with you. But again, we only wanted 25, so I go to my client and say, listen, the jury said 200, but you do realize that if we lose on appeal, we're back to zero. And they may say that, how can these people that were asleep in their beds in Louisiana be responsible for a 70-year-old doing an armed robbery in Pensacola, Florida? I said, we've done pretty good so far. We ought to take that and run, and we did. So it was enough to pay my client's medical bills and put something in his pocket. Mm-hmm. And certainly one of the most significant victories of my career. That was probably, I think that was my second civil jury trial. I had a lot of criminals. So let me tell you about my first civil jury trial, which happened 2 years before in 1985. In this particular case, this was when Destin was booming. It is booming. You know, they're building hotels and condominiums in the 80s like crazy. And we've all seen these work sites. And when you have these really big work sites, the contractors bring in their temporary trailers. So there was a trailer for the plumber. There was a trailer for the sheetrock guy. There was a trailer for the electrician, and trailers everywhere. So this fella was working for XYZ company, and he needed a tool, and he went to an employee of another company and says, do you have this, like a wrench or whatever he wanted? And the other employer says, yeah, just go up those stairs. It's in there. Borrow whatever you want. My guy starts to go up the stairs, and they collapse. These wooden stairs that are against these worksite trailers, you've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
His leg got entangled, and they got him to the hospital. And when they did the first x-ray, before they did anything, they x-rayed his foot. It was facing in the wrong direction. So imagine seeing an x-ray of a foot where your shin bone's going forward, but your toe is going the exact opposite way. I mean, it was hard to look at, truthfully. Well, he went to two law firms for representation. And guess what? They turned him down. Why? They said, workers' comp immunity. You were on the job. You got injured on the job. You don't have a case because you can't sue for on-the-job injuries. He came to me, the third lawyer. I said, well, that's generally the correct, sir, but you could sue other contractors. So I listened to him. I took the time. Now, whether this guy, the other law firms, he could have talked to a secretary, maybe even never talked to a lawyer. I don't know who these other law firms were, but he talked to me personally. And I said, no, workers' comp immunity doesn't apply because you're not suing your own boss. You're suing the other trailer because they didn't attach the steps. And we found out that all they did was lean the steps to the trailer. They never even screwed them in or nailed them in, or they were not even attached. So tremendous negligence, but against another contractor. So they offered me nothing, and we sued. And I pulled another lawyer from that very same law firm, Beggs and Lane, and this guy went on to be a federal magistrate. I think he still is today. Very great lawyer, lots of experience. And this, I'd had a lot of criminal experience, but I never had tried a civil jury trial. I'm out on my own, and, you know, I'm saying, God, you know, he definitely, it was a mismatch, you know, given experience. And the complicate matters, all the witnesses were these good old boys, and a lot of them seemed to be from around Baker, up in, you know, Holt and Baker, that area that came in. And these guys, you know, didn't have addresses. They lived with mama. They lived with their girlfriend. There was no such thing as cell phones. So how do you get in touch with these guys? How do you subpoena them? So I'm trying. I had a great investigator, and he had to keep on going back and forth and try to find these guys. One of them be in jail for DUI or a fight or something. So just these were my eyewitnesses. You don't pick your eyewitnesses. So it wasn't the best group of eyewitnesses. So we get through that, and, you know, so by the time trial starts, they'd offer me like a nuisance fee of $10,000. I go, you got to be kidding me. So, and I think at that time we would have taken $150. You know, that's what our number was. So we go to trial, and I'm worried to death that even if I subpoena these rednecks up there, that they're not going to appear. You know, it's just a subpoena, and they don't care. Well, one by one, they appeared. Every one of them, and they told the story. Everything is going my way. And we're halfway through the trial, and all of a sudden the defense lawyer, who hadn't really talked to me much either, comes up, says, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And he goes, got authority to offer you $250,000. Now, I usually have a poker face. I don't know if I had one then, but I'm going, whoa. I mean, because I'm thinking, done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I go back to my client and I say, you know, they've offered us $250,000, which is just crazy. I know you had an injury, but, you know, they've been at $10,000. They've jumped to $250,000. And he goes, they've been calling me a liar. They drug us all the way through this thing. We're here. I sense things are going my way too. They sense it. I sense it. Keep on going, Gross. Turn them down. Well, then a bailiff must have told the judge about what was going on, because then the judge, and it was Ben Gordon, who was a great judge, by the way, and he liked me. He saw me with all these little rinky-dink cases. I'm just a young lawyer, you know, and he goes, Gross, I just heard they offered you $250,000. I said, yes, Your Honor. He says, and you didn't take it? And I said, well, no, Judge, my client, you know, I offered him, I told him to take it. He said he didn't want to take it. He goes, that's a mistake. I've seen a lot of these cases, and, you know, $250,000 in Escambia County, Florida, for a broken leg is a good, good result. I said, I don't disagree, Judge, but it's not my call. So anyway, so we finally finished the case, but all along there had been one juror that bugged me. She was a lady in her 80s, and she kept on nodding off, like in the middle of testimony, and I'm making a great argument, even closing an argument, her eyes are like she's halfway falling asleep, and I'm thinking, I worried about her. Well, they finally come back with a verdict, and the foreman stands up, and Judge Gordon says, do you all have a verdict? And the foreman goes, yes, we do. And what is that verdict, Mr. Foreman? $750,000, Your Honor. And I'm going, holy gosh. And even the judge looked surprised. It was just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Florida, every verdict has to be unanimous. So a lot of times the losing party quickly pops up and says, I want to poll the jury just in case there's one juror that really wasn't on board for that. Maybe they were waffling and now they've changed their mind. So the judge had to go poll everybody. And the first five said, yep, that's my verdict. They get the old lady. She says, I want to say something. I said, oh, no. I just got the verdict of my lifetime, and this old lady's going to take it away from me. And he goes, what do you want to say, ma'am? And she says, she looks at my client. She goes, Sonny, I wanted to give you $1 million, but they wouldn't let me. And that was that. So that case broke me loose. It helped me as a young lawyer finance a practice, because I just had gotten out on my own and, you know, buying a building, copiers, all the stuff it costs. You know, I was able to fund that on my own without going into debt. And it really launched my career, gave me confidence. And again, I started trying a lot of cases. A lot more cases went to trial back then than today. Today, I guess people tend to analyze them more, find middle ground and whatever. Shortly thereafter, probably late 80s, I went to trial with another one of those begging lawyers, another one, and this guy ended up being a federal judge himself as well, and they offered me $11,000. I wanted $15,000. We went to trial. That would never happen today because of lots of different rules, but back then you just did it. You didn't agree. Pick a jury. Mm-hmm. And so I would say back then I was trying, you know, several jury trials a year, civil, and today it's, you know, probably once every 3, 4, 5 years just because so many do settle. The cost of going to trials more. They got mediation where a mediator makes you analyze every weakness and, you know, kumbaya and whatever. But anyway, hopefully people have enjoyed some of these war stories. And maybe in the future programs I'll give some more because over 46 years I've had a lot of interesting cases. This is Terrence Gross. I'm proud to say that I'm in practice with my three sons. We have 5 offices throughout the Panhandle. We have Pensacola, Milton, Crestview, Mary Esther, and Navarre. If you wish to reach us in the Pensacola area, it's very simple, 850-434-3333. Our website is great, grossandschuster.com. On there are many of the topics we talked about. I had one of our callers call me yesterday about her car insurance. She had listened to me, but the agent told her something different than what I said, and I made it very clear, and she was very grateful that I returned her phone call. I don't know if she's listening now or not. But anyway, I'm glad people do listen. Maybe they learn from it. But this is Terrence Gross, and I hope to be back in the next week or two.
All right, Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster, 437-1620, if you have any questions for Terrence today. So how many years of experience do you have in your practice?
46. So I just celebrated 46, and October will be 47. And it's just crazy how time has gone, and it's such a pleasure to be practicing with my three sons. It's walking every day, and there they are.
Mm-hmm. And what should people expect from sitting down at the consultation with you ahead of what they're looking to do?
Well, it's a free consultation for any personal injury case, but we just tell you the skinny, and sometimes we tell you you don't have a case or not one that we want to pursue because there's different variables in each and every case that you got to look at before deciding to work on a contingency fee basis.
Awesome. And what areas of personal injury and things do you cover?
Mainly are car wrecks, 90% car wrecks, some dog bites and some slip falls, but 90% are car wrecks.
All right. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.